The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
The perfect business gift is simple to give and a joy to get. That's exactly what Omaha Steaks business gifts deliver. Omaha Steaks offers a huge variety, from premium steaks to skillet meals. They also offer flexible gift plans for big and small businesses. Order the perfect business gift to try the Omaha Steaks gift experience for yourself, or send it as a gift. The perfect business gift includes 4 5-ounce bacon-wrapped tri-tip steaks, 4 4-ounce Omaha Steaks burgers, 4 3-ounce gourmet franks, 2 4-ounce boneless pork chops, 4 3-ounce kielbasa sausages. Plus, you'll get free shipping and 4 free caramel apple tartlets. This exclusive package is only $59.99. So go to omahasteaks.com, type Nation in the search bar, and choose the perfect business gift. Again, visit omahasteaks.com and enter code Nation in the search bar to send or experience this exclusive gift package for only $59.99.
This is the CBS News Weekend Roundup. Hurricane Harvey bears down.
We're hearing reports from National Weather Service up to 40 inches of localized rain, likely 10 to 20 inches across most of the affected region.
Also, the State Department responds to our reports about diplomats under attack in Cuba.
This is unprecedented.
And Hillary Clinton in her own words.
My skin crawled.
I'm Steve Dorsey at the CBS News Washington Bureau. Forecasters and emergency officials are monitoring Hurricane Harvey as Texas and parts of the Gulf Coast hunker down. Here's correspondent David Begno in Corpus Christi.
When you drive through Corpus Christi, nobody is on the road. I got to tell you, a lot of people have decided to board up their homes, hunker down, and stay. Others have left. But if you're still looking to get supplies, it may be too late.
Hotel manager.
Hotel consultant Jeff DeLong is making people get out.
Hopefully it won't be that bad, but it looks like it's going to be fun.
Across southern Texas, grocery store shelves are bare. People are rushing to stock up on last-minute supplies.
You gotta have your Spam and cans of chili, tuna.
Sandbags are being piled up and businesses are already boarded up. Hospitals worried about power outages have begun transporting critically ill babies from the Texas coastline and moving them inland. Many people in Corpus Christi are getting out, taking the city up on an offer to leave town for free. Hundreds of people boarded school buses headed for an evacuation center in San Antonio.
Okay, you're good to go.
All right. Let's read this.
Along the coast, thousands of people are under mandatory evacuations, but not here in Corpus Christi.
I think people are smart enough to make their decisions, and they don't need the government telling them what to do.
Mayor Joe McComb has decided not to order people out.
Why not put a mandatory evacuation for those low-lying areas?
You don't have any enforcement authority. And we just felt like that a lot of people would rather stay here in their homes.
The mayor knows the risks of severe weather. 2 years ago, his daughter-in-law and 2 grandchildren died in a flash flood in Wimberley, Texas. He says it's up to the people here to make their own decision. Are you staying or are you leaving?
My family, there were no warnings on the flash flood at Wimberley. I don't want that experience to happen to anybody else.
David Begno reporting. The White House is also monitoring Harvey's path and aftermath.
I'm Stephen Portnoy at the White House, where aides say President Trump will be kept up to date on the storm's track. Spokeswoman Sarah Huckabee Sanders notes John Kelly, the president's chief of staff, was up until last month the Secretary of Homeland Security.
I think that we are in great shape having General Kelly sitting next to the president throughout this process.
DHS is now being run by Acting Secretary Elaine Duke. FEMA is headed up by new administrator Brock Long, who ran emergency response in Alabama during the Deepwater Horizon oil spill.
Correspondent Stephen Portnoy at the White House. Let's talk now with Deputy FEMA Administrator Dave Grant. Thanks for talking with us.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
What's most concerning about this storm?
It is a large, dangerous, life-threatening storm that has intensified rapidly over the last couple of days. There will be storm surge flooding. There will be high winds, debris flying. Large, copious amounts of rain. In some areas, we're hearing reports from National Weather Service up to 40 inches of localized rain, likely 10 to 20 inches across most of the affected region that will cause flooding, dangerous situation for everyone there. And so right now, our focus is life and safety.
What should people be doing?
Right now, people should be listening to their local authorities. If they are directed to evacuate, they need to do so. If they're asked to evacuate, they need to do so. If they are past the point, if the window is closed in their particular area and they can't evacuate, they need to find shelter hopefully elevated, highest point possible that is still safe that could withstand the potential wind damage. They need to be prepared for several days, if not a week, without power.
Deputy FEMA Administrator David Grand, thanks for talking with us.
I appreciate it. Thanks very much, and thanks for helping us get the word out.
Now to a story CBS News broke about American and Canadian diplomats injured in bizarre attacks in Havana. For the first time, the State Department spokesperson, Heather Nauert, confirmed at least 16 Americans were affected.
This is unprecedented.
The State Department says it's taking the health attacks against the U.S. diplomats very seriously.
We are working and have been working to provide our staff and U.S. government employees with the best medical attention.
Since late last year, U.S. and Canadian diplomats in Havana have complained of hearing loss, nausea, headaches, and balance issues. Now, new documents show some ended up suffering mild brain injury. The State Department confirms some diplomats were medically evacuated to Miami for treatment and testing.
Are there any that are still in Cuba that have been affected by this who have asked the State Department to leave?
Some we asked to leave because their condition necessitated that. There were others that have chosen to stay there.
The State Department has also sent medical professionals to Havana to assess U.S. staff. While it hasn't identified a source of the attacks, it did expel two Cuban embassy officials in response.
We hold the Cuban authorities responsible for finding out who is carrying out these health attacks.
Officials are investigating whether the injuries could have come from a type of covert sonic device targeting diplomats' homes directed by the Cuban government.
Well, this could only have been accomplished by the Cuban intelligence service, as far as I know.
Brian Littell served in the CIA and specialized in Cuban relations for 35 years.
If this activity doesn't completely cease, then I think the Cubans may wind up paying an additional cost in terms of the nature of the diplomatic relationship.
In excerpts of Hillary Clinton's new book, What Happened, she details what went wrong in her presidential campaign and her reaction to President Trump. Here's CBS's Juliana Goldman with clips from her audiobook.
No matter where I walked, he followed me closely, staring at me, making faces.
It was the second presidential debate, and in Hillary Clinton's telling of the story, Donald Trump loomed behind her, breathing down her neck.
You're a star. They let you do it.
Only 2 days earlier, the campaign was rocked by the release of a tape in which Mr. Trump bragged about sexual assault. Now they were on a small stage together.
My skin crawled. It was one of those moments where you wish you could hit pause and ask everyone watching, well, what would you do? Do you stay calm, keep smiling, and carry on as if he weren't repeatedly invading your space? Or do you turn, look him in the eye, and say loudly and clearly, back up, you creep. Get away from me.
Clinton has second thoughts about not choosing option B.
Maybe I have overlearned the lesson of staying calm, biting my tongue, digging my fingernails into a clenched fist, smiling all the while.
Clinton has kept a relatively low profile since last November, and in another excerpt, she wrote about the disappointment of what she called her painful loss.
I knew that millions of people were counting on me, and I couldn't bear the idea of letting them down. But I did. I couldn't get the job done.
The excerpts allude to Russia's interference in the election. Clinton has also said she'll address mistakes like her private email server in the book, which she's calling the most personal book she's ever written. Juliana Goldman, CBS News, Washington.
Still to come, U.S. concerns about a Russian antivirus developer
with suspected ties to Russian intelligence.
That's next on the Weekend Roundup. On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. The White House is pushing back against reports the President and Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell are feuding. Correspondent Mola Lenghi reports.
A New York Times report says President Trump and Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell are not speaking to each other following a heated August 9th phone call. According to the Times, the president berated McConnell for the Senate's failure to repeal Obamacare, and the exchange transitioned into a profane shouting match. A day later, when President Trump was asked whether McConnell should retire, he had this to say.
If he doesn't get repeal and replace done, and if he doesn't get taxes done, meaning cuts and reform, and if he doesn't get a very easy one to get done, infrastructure, if he doesn't get them done, then you can ask me that question.
The Times also reports that McConnell has privately questioned
whether the president can, quote, salvage his administration after a series of summer crises, and wonders whether Mr. Trump will be able to lead the GOP into next year's midterm elections and beyond.
Leader McConnell told the Kentucky Rotary Group the president wants to do too much too fast.
Our new president had, of course, not been in this line of work before, and I think had excessive expectations about how quickly things happen.
Mark Harkins from the Government Affairs Institute at Georgetown University says President Trump cannot run the government like a business transaction.
President Trump, as a businessman, is treating Congress as a subcontractor.
Harkins says regardless of who gives in first, the American people will suffer because of the feud, and the Republican Party will take a major hit. Mo Lelenghi, CBS News, Washington.
There's new concerns at the U.S. government about a Russian antivirus software developer. CBS's Jeff Pagase has the story.
CBS News has confirmed that FBI officials have met with private industry representatives to relay concerns about Kaspersky Lab, a Moscow-based cybersecurity company with suspected ties to Russian intelligence. FBI agents have interviewed Kaspersky employees working in the U.S.
I don't use Kaspersky Lab products.
You don't. Rob Joyce, the nation's cybersecurity czar, is warning consumers against using the company's popular antivirus software.
Would you advise your family, your parents, to use it?
I wouldn't. You know, I worry that as a nation state, Russia really hasn't done the right things for this country. And they have a lot of control and latitude over the information that goes to companies in Russia. So I worry about that.
Mike Morrell is a former assistant director of the CIA.
There is a connection between Kaspersky and Russian intelligence. And I'm absolutely certain that Russian intelligence would want to use that connection to their advantage.
The U.S. government already prohibits its use, but local and state governments make extensive use of the Russian software. In fact, there are more than 400 million users worldwide. The fear is Kaspersky's antivirus software, which is supposed to protect users from malicious activity, could actually provide Russian intelligence with valuable information. The company is registered with the FSB, one of Russia's intelligence agencies.
This is the most important room in our...
The company's founder, Eugene Kaspersky, once served in Russia's Ministry of Defense and is a graduate of a computer school tied to Russian intelligence. The company denies the accusations, calling them false allegations. A spokesperson said in an email, "The company has never helped nor will it help any government in the world." U.S. officials dismiss the denials and continue to warn about the software.
As cyber czar, do you think more should be done to get the word out to the public not to use it?
I think they should look at the decisions the government's making and then make their own decisions.
The FBI says it regularly meets with private sector organizations to share security concerns, but it doesn't tell companies what business decisions to make. Kaspersky, meanwhile, is preparing a free version of its software. Jeff Begay, CBS News, Washington.
The Navy is still looking for several sailors still missing after the USS John McCain hit an oil tanker Monday heading to Singapore for a routine port call. 10 sailors went missing and 5 others were injured in the accident. More from correspondent David Martin.
The Navy expanded its search to look for more sailors who might have been washed out of the gaping hole a tanker punched in the McCain's hull. Having lost 2 ships, the McCain and the Fitzgerald, to deadly collisions, the commander of the Pacific Fleet, Admiral Scott Swift, said he no longer had confidence in Vice Admiral Joseph O'Coin, commander of the 7th Fleet, and relieved him effective immediately. Ships in the 7th Fleet and the rest of the world are now in the middle of a safety stand-down to review basic seamanship, one of several steps senior Navy officers felt O'Coin should have ordered in June after the Fitzgerald collision. A string of accidents in the 7th Fleet dates back to January when the guided missile cruiser Antietam ran aground in Tokyo Bay. The grounding was blamed on Captain Joseph Kerrigan, who was relieved of his command. But the investigation also found substandard performance from multiple crew members. The house cleaning in 7th Fleet may not be over. Lower-ranking squadron commanders are responsible for monitoring conditions aboard individual ships like the McCain and Fitzgerald, and may have failed to spot an accident about to happen. David Martin, CBS News, the Pentagon.
Meanwhile, a U.S. Navy ship sunk during World War II has been located. Here's correspondent Vladimir Dutier.
That's it, Paul. We've got it.
With the hull identification number 35 visible, researchers found the USS Indianapolis. New video shows the ship's distinct World War II era weapons.
Yeah, this is definitely a dual 40 millimeter.
This photo shows those same weapons defending the Indy from Japanese fighters. Robert Kraft led the expedition.
The depth of water out here and the remote location, it makes it extremely difficult to mount a search and be persistent enough to be successful.
New technology enabled the crew of the RV Petrel to launch a vehicle that could travel down more than 18,000 feet to the ocean floor.
She was the most iconic and historically significant ship of that time.
She had just completed a secret mission, delivering components for one of the two atomic bombs to be dropped on Japan. While en route to the Philippines, two Japanese torpedoes hit and sunk the ship. Edgar Harrell is one of the estimated 800 men that escaped. An SOS was never received, and no one knew they were missing.
We're thirsty, we're hungry, we are just completely exhausted, but we dare not give up.
For 4.5 days, they waited in shark-infested waters.
A shark would be coming through the group, and he would take someone fairly close to you.
Only 316 men were rescued. Harrell, now 92, says he was afraid he would never see the discovery of the USS Indianapolis.
It still leaves open the trauma of that experience, but the fact that we found the ship now, that brings closure to the story of the Indianapolis.
Vladimir Dutier reporting. Up next, the parents of a Penn State fraternity pledge who died during initiation speak out.
It's hard.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
In business, risks and rewards come with every decision, like moving to the cloud with Office 365. While its benefits include anywhere access and lower costs, cyber threats and user errors can quickly wipe out data and the money you save. Barracuda Essentials for Office 365 provide an added layer of security and functionality for threat protection, email migration, data recovery, and quality of service. Move securely to Office 365. Visit barracuda.com/essentials to learn more.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. Penn State's moving forward with reforms to its fraternities and sororities after a pledge died. Here's correspondent Nora O'Donnell.
Preliminary hearings are underway for members of the now-closed Beta Theta Pi frat house. 18 of them are facing charges in connection to the death of sophomore Timothy Piazza. Piazza died in February following an initiation ceremony that involved heavy drinking. He fell down a flight of stairs and hit his head repeatedly, often in view of his fraternity brothers. No one called for help until the following morning.
We have a friend who is unconscious.
During hearings in July, the prosecution presented apparently incriminating text messages sent from some of the frat brothers. I don't want to go to jail for this, wrote one member. But lawyers for the 16 defendants who appeared at the preliminary hearing claim the evidence doesn't warrant a trial. Some argue the brothers didn't force Piazza to drink and can't be held responsible for knowing the difference between intoxication and serious injury. Two of the brothers waived their right to a preliminary hearing. Now, with the fall semester underway, Penn State President Eric Barron is implementing more than a dozen reforms to Greek life at the school. The university will take responsibility for oversight and discipline of fraternities and sororities. Social restrictions addressing alcohol use will remain in place, as well as a no-tolerance policy for hazing.
Timothy's parents, Jim and Evelyn, and attorney Tom Klein talked with Nora and the rest of CBS This Morning.
We've got the school year starting up again. It's been 6 months since your son's death. How are you doing?
It's hard, especially having to bring our son back to school this past weekend.
And this goes to Penn State.
It's your older son.
Yeah.
Your older
yeah.
Son.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So normally we make a couple day trip out of it. We were in and out the same day. We just couldn't stick around. It was hard knowing that we should have been bringing two kids back.
Jim, we now know that Penn Penn State has announced some of these changes, which you have been pushing for, your family has been pushing for. Are they enough?
Well, you know, I think they're a good start. We've been in contact with President Barron for the past 6 months about proposals that they need to implement. And many of the proposals that they've put forth are our suggestions, but there's still more that they need to do. They really haven't implemented a lot of them yet. And at the end of the day, they need to implement and, more importantly, enforce. But we're happy to see that they've taken responsibility and said that their oversight has been severely lacking for Greek life. But they have the same people involved, and those people were ineffective, so I'm concerned about that.
Now, one of the defense attorneys argued in a hearing recently that nobody forced Tim, your son, to drink, and said expecting young men to be able to distinguish between extreme intoxication and a head injury, quote, he says, quote, places an impossible burden on them. What do you say to those who argue that, listen, this was just a tragic accident?
No.
Evelyn?
They said right away, somebody texted that he fell hair first. They knew he hit his head. He was unconscious. Mm-hmm. He was having seizures. They knew that he was in a bad way. And who hasn't been involved with high school sports and concussions? Mm-hmm. You know. You know this stuff.
Mm-hmm. I just think it's an absurd statement. I mean, he wanted to be part of this club. You know, they fed significant amounts of alcohol into him. Your judgment immediately starts to go sideways. Mm-hmm. And they continued to force alcohol on him and all the other pledges.
You said force alcohol. You don't consider your son a reckless person.
Absolutely not. Tim was a good guy. He was not a drinker.
How do you know he wasn't a drinker?
I've talked to his friends and his roommates. Mm-hmm. I asked them. You know, I was concerned.
Yeah.
And they said, no, he was not. He was not a big drinker. I think that these guys just put so much alcohol into all these young men
and then didn't watch them, let them be on their own.
Well, that brings up an interesting point. A lot of parents hope that there's an adult in the room as kids are partying. And there's a man named Tim Bream, the fraternity's adult advisor. He was in the house the night of the party. He declined our request for a comment. Do you think he should be punished?
Yeah, well, let's get this straight. They were all adults. Tim Bream, we believe, is culpable, but they were all adults. They knew what they were doing. They committed crimes. And after they committed those crimes and put our son in grave danger, they all went to bed. They were all adults. They knew what they were doing.
Mm-hmm. And then they tried to cover it up the next day when they knew that it was bad.
The other thing that's so difficult is there's a tape. It's on tape. That's what so...
Surveillance video.
And I can't stop thinking about that. And you agreed to watch it only if you watch it with the university president.
And the trustees. Right.
And you wanted to do that. Why?
Well, I only wanted to do that so they would do it, so they could see the severity of what happened. And we want them to watch it. Yeah. We personally do not want to watch it, but if they make us, we will. But they need to watch it so that they can implement these changes. And again, they need to enforce. Without enforcement, mm-hmm. none of this is really going to do anything.
Tom, we've heard Penn State's president say that the university will, quote, push for statewide legislation to toughen penalties for hazing. Is the law the problem?
Well, the people are the problem, but law is a great deterrent. And we're working with Senator Cormann, the majority leader in Pennsylvania. We're also working with Representative Meehan in the Congress, and we're looking to change the law. We believe that stiffer penalties will mean deterrence, and that's a key.
But if there's a parent who's sending their son or daughter to college, what's the message that you have about safety?
Go in with your eyes open. Talk to your kids. This could happen to anybody. If it happened to Tim, it could happen to anybody. And if it doesn't feel right, if something makes you uncomfortable, if you feel pressured, don't do it. You're not invincible. You're so important to somebody somewhere.
I also encourage all the parents that if they hear something, that they should also speak up and say something. We've heard a lot of stories about severe hazing at Penn State now from a lot of people. Some have written letters to the president. Others just let it go. You need to speak up.
A lot of the stuff is out there.
Speaking up. Yeah. You could be home. You're still grieving. This is still very recent. But you are speaking up because you want people to know this needs to change and change now.
It can't happen to anybody else. It's just too awful.
Yep.
We have a big stake in this. This is part of Tim's legacy. We have to make a difference.
New concerns about the health of Appalachia.
A new study concludes that 25 million people who live in Appalachia have fallen well behind the rest of the nation when it comes to public health. Ben Chandler of the Foundation for a Healthy Kentucky says it's time for, quote, a wake-up call.
If you don't get the health better, you're not going to have much economic development. You're not going to have good jobs. People are going to suffer in a variety of ways.
Chandler says poverty and lifestyles, especially smoking, eating habits, and lack of physical exercise, are the biggest reasons the region is falling behind when it comes to public health. Jim Crisula, CBS News, Cincinnati.
$758 million Powerball jackpot winner, 53-year-old Mavis Wanzik of Chicopee, Massachusetts, says her winning combination came from birthdays and a lucky family number.
There's a thing between me and my mom and my stepfather, and I have a friend. We all go out to dinner on a Friday night, and we all play Keno, and our number is 4.
Coming up on the weekend roundup, air power in Afghanistan. Follow us on Twitter. We've got headlines at CBS News Radio. And I'm tweeting at Steve_Dorsey on the CBS News Weekend Roundup. On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. Prince Harry has strong words and accusations for the paparazzi involved in the death of his mother.
20 years after his mother's tragic death, an angry Prince Harry points fingers.
I think one of the hardest things to come to terms with is the fact that the people that chased her through into the tunnel were the same people that were taking photographs of her while she was still dying on the back seat of the car.
In the new documentary, Prince Harry not only blamed the paparazzi for the crash that killed his mom, but said they stood by and watched her die.
She'd had quite a severe head injury, but she was very much still alive on the back seat. And those people that caused the accident, instead of helping, were taking photographs of her dying on the back seat.
Dozens of photographers chased after the car Princess Diana was in just before it lost control inside a Paris tunnel 20 years ago. Nearing the anniversary of Diana's death, the what-ifs still persist.
It'll either make or break you, and I wouldn't let it break me.
Prince William simply called it the hardest moment of his life.
I didn't want her worried or her legacy to be that, you know, William and or Harry were completely and utterly devastated by it.
William and Harry said they specifically waited for the 20th anniversary to speak so publicly about their mother's death. Prince William even saying, "We won't be doing this again." Jonathan Vigliotti, CBS News, London.
As the Pentagon plans to send more U.S. troops to Afghanistan to fight the Taliban, advisors to the country's armed forces are looking up. Correspondent Charlie Dagula has more.
It may not look like a modern aircraft. Then again, the Afghan military's long fight against the Taliban could hardly be described as a modern war.
What they're missing.
Brigadier General Philip Stewart says it just might break the stalemate here.
This is a country that screams out for air power. And it doesn't have a whole lot of roads. It's mountainous.
And that terrain suits the new Afghan fighter division, which consists of 12 American-built A-29 planes and about two dozen MD-530 attack helicopters, capable of delivering a full payload. Heavy machine guns and guided missiles. U.S. combat pilot Lieutenant Colonel Johnny Green is in charge of handling Afghanistan's top guns.
All the communication is on them.
The guy on the ground hears the target speaking to the pilot in the cockpit.
All in their own language. That is all on them.
So is the maintenance. Because the A-29 uses the same kind of engine found in planes like Cessnas, they're easy to fix. It says something about the security situation here that pilots don't want to be identified. But he said it's the Taliban who have new reasons to be fearful.
At the first, they were like laughing at this. It's just like this is the World War styled airplanes.
Yeah, World War II style, right.
He said that was until they found themselves on the receiving end of one in combat.
After that, they said we should hide.
So now they hide when they hear you.
They are hiding, yes.
They're also capable of dropping laser-guided 500-pound bombs, which makes them both cheap and deadly.
An aircraft like this is not going to hold its own against an air force like the Russians or China.
Sure. It's not designed to. Is there a need to have advanced aircraft? No, not in this theater.
And it's a mission on fast forward. Afghan pilots come right out of U.S. training and straight into combat. With the Taliban gaining ground, the only advantage they've got is above it. U.S. Air Force officials said they were examining new ways on how to expand the training of the Afghan Air Force and also ramping up U.S. air power and American airstrikes in light of the new military strategy here. Charlie Daggett, CBS News, Kabul, Afghanistan.
Back home, here's something you don't think would be affected by the opioid epidemic, the lobster industry.
Josh Kane has spent more than 15 years fishing off the coast of Maine. For 10 of those years, he struggled with an opioid addiction as his fellow lobstermen looked the other way.
It's one of those things that's kind of like don't ask, don't tell. You know, as long as you show up every day and do your job, you know, nobody's really going to say anything.
They're a tough, proud, and private bunch with grueling hours and serious physical demands. But the payoff can easily be in the six figures for the short summer season. Economist Charles Rutledge says much of that money is going up in smoke.
Millions of dollars of income that otherwise should be spent in our coastal communities is being lost to heroin and to diverted prescription drugs.
Here in Washington County, economic leaders say the impact of the opioid epidemic on the lobster industry could easily affect an entire generation.
If you look around a coastal town, you have a sense of the value of the catch coming in. That new roof, that investment that should have come from a series of good years, just isn't.
376 people died of drug overdoses last year in Maine, the vast majority from opioids. Kane eventually got help and hasn't abused painkillers in 7 years. He now works with the local treatment center where a third of the clients are fishermen.
Asking for help is perceived as a weakness. You know, if we break a finger out here, we're supposed to just shrug it off. And then to admit that something's got you beat and held down is a hard thing for a fisherman to come to terms with.
Working side by side, he hopes to reach a community that's used to navigating troubled waters alone. Kenneth Craig, CBS News, on the coast of Maine.
Activists are calling on NFL teams to recruit quarterback Colin Kaepernick following very public protests where he refused to stand for the national anthem. More from correspondent Dana Jacobson.
NFL!
What the hell?
NFL!
What the hell?
Social justice advocates rallied to show their support for Colin Kaepernick. The embattled quarterback was likened to civil rights heroes Rosa Parks and Muhammad Ali.
We've got to make sure the modern-day Muhammad Ali, Colin Kaepernick, we surround and support him.
It's so clear, to I think, to everybody that he is being blackballed or blacklisted or banned.
Bill Roden, writer-at-large at ESPN's The Undefeated, thinks team owners are worried about a fan backlash if they sign Kaepernick.
NFL owners have decided, out of a sense of fear, that we are not going to allow this person to even compete for a job.
Kaepernick nearly beat the Ravens in Super Bowl 47, but with his numbers on the decline last year, he had to fight to win back his starting job, even as he protested on the sidelines.
We have a lot of people that aren't treated equally, aren't given equal opportunities.
Kaepernick's gesture has spread throughout the league. On Monday, about a dozen Cleveland Browns took a knee, including a white player. Commissioner Roger Goodell has repeatedly denied the former 49ers' views are keeping him off NFL rosters.
Our clubs make independent evaluations of players. If they think a player can help them improve their team, they're going to do that.
Roden sees hypocrisy, since players accused of violent crimes remain in the NFL.
Dana Jacobson reporting. Coming up, remembering Jerry Lewis.
Look no fighter, buddy. I'm your jerk.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
Are you hiring? Do you know where to post your jobs to find the best candidates? With ZipRecruiter, you can post your job to 100-plus job sites with just one click. Then, their powerful technology efficiently matches the right people to your job better than anyone else. That's why ZipRecruiter is different. Unlike other job sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them. In fact, 80% of employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate through the site within one day. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. And right now, our listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/FTN. That's ZipRecruiter.com/FTN. One more time to try it for free, go to ZipRecruiter.com/FTN. That's ZipRecruiter.com/FTN. ZipRecruiter.com/FTN.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. Some of the victims of a Catholic priest who confessed to being a racist are speaking out.
Well, it's said to say that he was a priest.
Philip and Barbara Butler are reliving that moment 40 years ago when they discovered a cross 7 feet tall burning on their front lawn.
I went to the door and I saw it, and it was just like, why? You know, where did this come from?
It came from William Acheson. In an essay published Monday, the 62-year-old Catholic priest confessed to being a leader of the KKK in his early 20s. My actions were despicable, he wrote. While 40 years have passed, I must say this, I'm sorry.
It has been years, and we have never heard one word or anything. And then all of a sudden, it's really just like a shock.
He was sentenced to jail time for mailing threatening letters to Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s widow, Coretta Scott King, and for several cross burnings, including at the Butler's home. But when it came time to pay the family $26,000 in damages, Acheson disappeared. In 1982, a front-page story published by the Washington Post characterized the Butler's agony, prompting President and Mrs. Reagan to visit the family at their Maryland home that same afternoon.
I simply told them what a pleasure it was to come and be able to visit them here and how much I regretted any unpleasantness that they may have had, because there shouldn't be any place in our country for that sort of thing.
Now, the Butlers not only want an in-person apology, but they want Acheson to disclose other members of the KKK who may have helped him. Errol Barnett, CBS News, Fairfax, Virginia.
Customs and Border Protection is looking for new recruits in some unusual places.
Tens of thousands of fans came to the Weave Fest in Detroit Lakes, Minnesota for the country music.
Interested in a career?
Customs and Border Agent Tony Thornton came to the Weave Fest for the tens of thousands of fans.
You'll visit cbp.gov.
Crystal Bridgers was intrigued.
I never really thought I would get a job here if I...
At a music festival?
Yeah.
The agency has struggled to hire the 5,000 agents President Trump requested to help secure the Mexican border. Yeah! So the CBP got creative and is venturing to Spartan races, county fairs, and country music festivals. But the agency is also having a hard time finding applicants who can pass a polygraph test. By its own admission, 75% of them failed. The agency now offers a shorter polygraph test and allows waivers from the test for law enforcement and the military.
We've looked at all the steps in the hiring process. And
Acting Deputy CBP Commissioner Ronald Vidiello.
So we're looking for people who make it through the hiring steps, which if we find the right kind of people, it'll be easy for them.
But the last time the Border Patrol aggressively increased recruiting after 9/11, the CBP didn't have polygraph tests. It was plagued by corrupt and violent agents.
How are you?
Matt Vidiello says that's why finding the right recruits is crucial.
We have to make sure we're attracting the right kind of people.
Don Daler, CBS News, Detroit Lakes, Minnesota.
Amazon's planning big changes to its newest business, Whole Foods.
The nickname for Whole Foods? Whole Paycheck, because of the steep prices. With Amazon's acquisition closing Monday, the online retailer says it'll lower prices on everything from organic avocados to baby kale and rotisserie chickens. Organic World Trade bananas, large brown eggs, responsibly farmed salmon, and tilapia will be cheaper, along with almond butter and organic Fuji apples. Prime members will eventually get Whole Foods customer rewards and get even more savings in stores.
And finally this weekend, CBS's Steve Futterman with a tribute to Jerry Lewis, who died last Sunday morning.
Ladies and gentlemen, Jerry Lewis.
Jerry Lewis's humor was rarely sophisticated or deep, but it did do the one thing humor must do. It made people laugh.
Look no fighter, buddy. I'm your jerk.
The image of Jerry Lewis most of us will remember is that of a slapstick, zany comic who talked funny.
What's your name?
Georgie.
My name is Georgie Hillman.
And that was intentional. Lewis often claimed he was trying to play the role of a 9-year-old.
Oh, yeah, well, of course. Everybody is 9 except they resent it
They hide it.
Lewis came from a vaudeville family. His first appearance on stage came at the age of five. In his teens, he began performing in New York City nightclubs. His biggest break came in July 1946 when he performed for the first time with Dean Martin.
Good evening and welcome to the Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis Show on the Colgate Comedy Hour.
During the next 10 years, Martin and Lewis became an American institution.
Hey, you and me, we're gonna be partners, you and me.
Whether it was radio, television, nightclubs, or movies, Martin and Lewis were a hit.
There's a tree in the meadow with a stream drifting by. Answer the phone, Jerry, I'm tying my tie.
Okay, Dean, there's a tree in the meadow.
It seemed to be the perfect partnership.
But we'll travel along,
singing a song side by side.
But then in 1956, it fell apart. One of the most famous show business breakups ever.
You break the water bag and you see your creation alive and well and walking, and then it's only 10 years old and it dies. It's very traumatic.
Jerry Lewis became a solo act, a successful one as well, especially on the big screen.
Jerry Lewis is a magician with a rabbit you won't believe.
In the late 50s and early 60s, he starred in a series of films.
Jerry Lewis in The Geisha Boy.
There was The Bellboy, The Errand Boy, The Patsy, and in 1963, Lewis's most acclaimed film, The Nutty Professor.
I hope I haven't hurt anyone. I didn't mean to do anything that wasn't of a kind nature.
When you walk through a storm, keep your head.
In the 1970s, Lewis's box office appeal began to diminish. He still performed, but Lewis started becoming best known for his annual muscular dystrophy telethons.
You always wanted to get a dollar more?
Yeah.
Even though the telethons raised hundreds of millions of dollars, some criticized Lewis for patronizing those afflicted with the illness. His humor has been trivialized by some who label it as silly and childish. Throughout it all, however, the telethons, the movies, the nightclubs, Jerry Lewis always said there was one constant, his desire to provoke laughter.
You have an audience of 1,000 people all sitting, facing the stage. The thought of rejection is instantaneous. The tendency to have that work, the odds on it, are very great against it.
It didn't always work for Jerry Lewis, but usually it did.
Never walk alone.
Steve Futterman, CBS News, Los Angeles.
God bless you and good night.
That does it for the weekend roundup. Thanks for listening. We want to get your feedback. Send us your story ideas, chain letters, love letters, whatever, to weekendroundup at cbsnews.com. The show's always online on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, and now Spotify. The Weekend Roundup is produced at the CBS News Washington Bureau. Lou Walker is the technical supervisor. Dory Valerio is the production assistant in New York. Have a great week. I'm Steve Dorsey, CBS News.